Good morning and welcome to Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. I am Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center. With me, as usual, is Shelley Wrench. Shelley is the administrator. And Shelley, we decided that today we will run part two of...
You being president.
President Nash Gabriel, yeah.
Sure. And me as HHS secretary.
What was that?
And me as HHS secretary.
Yeah, I think I will give you that position. But you have to agree with me 100%, otherwise you get fired, just like the president.
I can do that.
If you agree with me, you're gone. And listen, we addressed many issues in the previous episode, and I hinted that in part two, we will talk about also the role of the hospitals. I was mentioning that there is no doubt there is overutilization of the hospitals. And again, that could be 5%, 10%, 20%. Fact is, we are talking about just shrinking the cost. And by the way, everybody knows, the title of the program is Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine, because I came to believe 12 years ago that the more money we spent, the lesser is the outcome. Everybody laughed at that. Now, huge studies, every single study is showing that institutions that are more expensive, their outcomes are worse. Who would have known that? So, back to the hospitals. HHS Secretary Azar, he gave a talk at the American Hospital Association conference back in May. And he gave his own personal experience when he was hospitalized. And he was sitting in the front of audience that didn't like to hear what he was going to say. But he was talking about transparency. He was admitted. He was very thankful to the nurses and doctors there. And, you know, unfortunately, we really have very, very good doctors and nurses in the U.S. Unfortunately, the good ones are not the ones who are in charge of running the system. But anyway, he was complaining that days and weeks after he went home,
He kept getting bills.
Yeah. And even if he's the HHS secretary, he has a vast experience in healthcare, including running a drug company. He couldn't even figure out what those bills were about. So how do we solve that problem? Well, whenever you deal with big industry like insurance companies or like pharmacy benefit plans or the hospitals, as a president, my biggest concern would be how powerful are their lobbyists? And believe me, they are very, very powerful. I always say something that people will not like to hear. I prefer politicians who are very wealthy, because it is very hard to corrupt the wealthy. If I am worth $1 billion, how much do you think you have to pay me to buy my conscience?
A lot.
Yeah, $200-300 million?
Yeah.
But if I am broke, I have only $300,000 in my savings, I think $50,000 will buy my conscience very easily. And this is exactly what's happening. When you have all these elected politicians who get, again, I'm not critical of them, although I am, because their approval rating is now down close to the car dealers. These politicians, they accept perks, direct or indirect, although it's criminal to do that, or not a criminal, felony, whatever it is. They do get kickbacks, and they do get a lot of money from special interests during the elections. The special interest people, they don't donate money to politicians out of the goodness of their heart. They don't donate the money because the politicians are the Salvation Army or Red Cross or Mother Teresa. No. They pay the money to buy influence. And when you look, the most powerful lobbies are American Hospital Association, the insurance industry, correct? The
yes.
Pharmacy benefit plans, and goes on, the teachers' unions. And these people, they know how to twist the arms of the politicians. Now, you might say, I'll be the president, I'll be $3 billion like President Trump, I don't care about them. The problem is, these elected officials, they will be needed. The president will need them to pass legislation. And they will not give their vote, even if they are in his own party. They will not give their vote easily unless their base, and their base is not the people who vote for them. The base is the people who actually put money into their campaigns. Unless that base is happy and satisfied, there is a problem. So whenever we go to fundraiser, and you know, we do fundraisers in this town. I go to some, we sponsor some in our house. Generally, representatives from the hospital associations outnumber everybody else.
Very true. Very true.
Is it because they love those? Believe me, it's not because they love the candidates. They will do that to whoever candidate it is because they want their influence. Just look at, you asked me in the previous episode, how do I solve the problem? I'm going to start by saying one of the biggest problems we have in America is something called Stark II Law. Stark Law came back in 1974-75, where it prohibits physicians from self-referring, meaning myself and a bunch of docs in town cannot get together and buy this radio station and use it exclusively to advertise for our practice. Now, individually, I can do that. But a conglomerate of physicians, does that make sense?
No, it doesn't.
But that's the way it is. Bunch of doctors cannot open a pharmacy. They own it all together. They can, as long as they don't allow their own patients to buy the drug from that pharmacy. Does that make sense?
I know. No other field does this occur.
Just think about it. A bunch of doctors cannot get together and build an imaging center to build a CAT scan MRI that will compete with the hospitals, and compete usually means what? Lower cost. We cannot do that, shall we?
By the way, did you know that one of Trump's plans is to tell the states to scale back on the certificates of need?
See?
Yeah, he's working on it.
He's doing my job. I should be the president. That's what I would do.
Right.
The certificate of need, for the people to understand, is, fortunately, in Ohio, we don't have it. In many other states, they do. So, in a state where there is a CON requirement, if I'm a physician and I want to build a CAT scan unit, I have to prove to the state government that the area needs that CAT scan. Well, who owns most CAT scans in the U.S.? Hospitals. And the hospital lobby have inserted this certificate of need in many, many states. Fortunately, we have good
representatives. They did not win Ohio.
In Ohio. Yeah. And so when I decided to build a CAT scan in our center 13 years ago, it was, okay, buy the unit and build it.
But yet you can't get a bunch of physicians to help own that with you. You had to go on your own to do it.
Right. So that's the crux of the problem. I have the money to build a CAT scan. A family doctor doesn't. But 10 family docs get together, they can. But legally?
They're not allowed.
Stark Law is a federal law. It's not state law.
Right.
They cannot do that. Guess who's behind all this? The American Hospital Association. You would think, I'm not talking about like an anti-conservatives. You would think when we had the House and the Senate and the White House and Supreme Court all controlled by the Republicans, that somebody would have dared to say, let's re-examine Stark Law.
But then they wouldn't have all the associates of the hospitals going to their little parties of raising funds.
To be honest with you, Shelley, you're right, but they will get over it.
I don't know.
Think about it. If physicians in this town can get together and build an imaging center, build a stat care, and announce to the public transparency in the prices, like we do, our CAT scan per body part costs $260. When you do it at the hospital, same machine, right?
Yep, times 10.
Times 10, about $900. There goes competition. That's how you compete. And if we had two or three CAT scanners and all of them announced that, I think the hospitals will have only one choice. And guess what? It's to match up and lower their price to match in the community, because they will have no reason to say, I can justify it. They will have no reason to justify threefold higher cost. Currently, they have Starklaw on their side. You try to do anything like this, and it's gone. Let me give another example. Go back to how the government actually is not helping us much in lowering the healthcare cost. I will not mention names, but I think the listeners can deduce. The government, about 10, 15 years ago, donated $2 million to each of our two hospitals to expand the intensive care unit. You know, I work in this town. We had enough beds in the intensive care unit. But each hospital expanded their bed capacity by, they tripled them or doubled them, whatever. Now, when I say I'm a physician and I have noticed we had enough beds, when you triple the number of beds, what is the hospital administration going to do?
Fill them.
Fill them. How do you fill them? You go to other counties, grab patients, and put them in the ICU here? No. You lower the standard needed to admit patients to the intensive care unit. Now,
which I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. With that's part of the fraud, waste, and abuse, like the abuse of their power, abuse to fill them. There's things identified for fraud, waste, and abuse, and one of them is over-treating patients, which feeds right into what you were saying. So not only is filling the beds an abuse, but over-treating, like many cases that you physicians would do unnecessary treatments or testing, is helping to, you know, fill their pockets. And that's the same thing as the hospital. So what do you do to fix the over-treatment of patients?
There is over-treatment and there is over-diagnosis. So how do you determine if a patient needs to be admitted to the hospital? You have to identify a serious illness. And it is very, very serious. They go to the intensive care unit. Who determines the seriousness of the illness? The emergency room physicians. They determine if this is serious enough. Is there checks and balances? Absolutely none. So what would I do? I think the government, special, and insurance companies, if insurance companies are interested in lowering the cost, which we don't think they are, they can do auditing. It's not difficult to have auditor, qualified people. I would have qualified, intelligent physicians be the auditor. Review cases at ICU. And you look and you read all the notes. And you can easily find out if that ICU admission was justified. If not, sorry, you will not get paid for that. And when the hospitals start taking big hits, they will be forced to have their own internal auditing system. That admission will be based on real need rather than you go to emergency room, chest X-ray showed infiltrates in the lower lobe, maybe atelectasis, maybe pneumonia. They ignore the maybe atelectasis, which is basically if you don't take a deeper breath, the lower part of the lung doesn't expand. You take the second part, maybe pneumonia, it's a maybe, put them in the hospital.
And but back up a second, though. They did that CAT scan, even though there might have been a CAT scan done 2 days before that somewhere else.
Exactly. And there is a standard. See, when you talk about hospitals policing themselves, they actually put SOP, standard operating procedures. Those things are not done. The claim is to do them to promote quality, blah, 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 all that. But actually, they are done to augment not only hospitalization, but also to augment the intensity. Example, you admit a patient like the one mentioned, atelectasis, and you find that the creatinine is 1.3, 1.4, normal should be 0.9. 1.3 creatinine, yeah, you drink two bottles of this water and you will be fine. But it also gives the right to add that diagnosis as acute renal injury. That augments how much they get paid for that hospitalization. So auditing is needed if we really want to solve the problem. It's not to penalize people, but to make people accountable. And guess what, Shelley? Money aside, you know what bothers me the most? What bothers me the most these days is that these processes are making physicians less scientific. So when I'm a physician and I say, maybe this patient has pneumonia, maybe acute renal injury, and consult a nephrologist, I am actually cheating on my intellect, which makes my education become redundant. It makes my knowledge in medicine and experience also redundant. That's scary. More importantly, every single day you spend in the hospital, you are taking a risk with your life.
Oh, totally agree with that. We've seen that happen to our own patients many times.
Hospital error, hospital death is the number three cause of death in the U.S. after heart attack, strokes, and cancer.
So what do you do as President of the United States to fix that?
Auditing. But has to be very scientific auditing. Shall I tell you what? You know, I do a lot of clinical trials. Experiment with all these dangerous drugs, right? That ultimately some of them come to the market. I have learned we get audited for every single trial. And these audits are done by really highly select qualified people. I tell you what, they comb the chart word by word. They analyze everything I say. They analyze everything the nurses say. They analyze everything the lab technicians do, word by word. And they keep me on my tiptoes. Absolutely. I cannot make a claim or a diagnosis without really substantiating it. That's the quality of auditing we need. They should learn. The government can learn from drug companies who do meaningful research to develop new drugs. They can learn from them on how to audit. And when you do that, again, I am not saying I'll punish people. But currently, there is no accountability. You walk in the emergency room and you can do anything you want as a nurse or as a doctor or whatever in the emergency room. And there is, I hate to say this, there is some kind of incentive built for people to admit patients to the hospital. I have promoted them. In fact, in my book, Good Medicine, Cheaper Medicine, I promoted the idea that there should be free market in the emergency room. Currently, the emergency rooms have only one group who is approved by the hospital. They have a contract with them. Nobody else can practice emergency room in that hospital. I suggested that the emergency room should be independent entity, that hospitals should not own emergency rooms.
That's a great idea.
Make it autonomous. Because currently, and you know, a lot of the emergency room docs are my friends, and I know they are very, very good docs, but we're human beings. The system is so designed that even the most professional and honest of us get sometimes pushed into really not being as good as we can be. So that's one area. Why are the hospitals owning emergency rooms? Because they have big buildings? Carve it out.
Well, they need that reception window for the hospital. That's I think, all emergency.
45% of hospitalizations come through the emergency room.
Right. It's a receptionist desk for a very, very expensive hotel.
That actually, by itself, believe me, if we do that, and of course, if we also reverse Stark Law, people probably will not believe me. For every dollar we spend in the U.S. on healthcare, Europe spends 61 cents. I realize they have national health services.
Wait. There's a lot of things that go against that, though. It's slow.
But Shelley, I have been practicing here for 30 years. The waste is astronomical. We keep talking about in the government through Obamacare, there is these projects of quality measures. What are the quality measures? Mention some of them, Shelley, and tell me which one of them actually has an impact on how people are being taken care of.
Well, the biggest one that I think is completely out there is asking the patient about their risk of falling when they're 30 years old.
Yes. I had, until last year, part of the Obamacare also, I have to ask every single patient how much they smoke, when do they start smoking, and did I talk to them about quitting smoking? That's considered as a measure of my quality of care.
Shouldn't that be standard?
Shelley, it's all distraction.
Yeah.
This is all distraction, and the bureaucrats love it, because when the government imposes on us these measures, we have to hire consultants to guide us into how to make the government happy. Guess who those consultants are? Lobbyists. And that's why when the president now talks about PBMs or the companies or whatever, people in Washington, the establishment, that establishment, people think that the establishment is the Congress and the Senate a little bit, but the real establishments are the lobbyists who are there with one and simple one intention. Keep their job and make more money. And they will resist through their money they pay through the politicians, to the politicians. They will resist any attempt to reverse those things. Well, no, they know very well that actually what the president's doing is exactly the right thing, or what I would do as a president, God forbid, is exactly the right thing for the society. Lower the healthcare cost, which will provide more access. So you go back now to the biggest thing that people talk about is the pre-existing conditions. If we lower, pre-existing conditions affecting how many million people? 16 maybe. If we lower healthcare costs by mere 3%, although I think we can lower it by 20% and provide better care, because we will do less unnecessary procedures, less unnecessary hospitalizations. We will save a lot of money. You will take only 1/5 of that to pay for the care. I would be happy as a president to take that saving and give it to Medicaid in every single area. Here's the money, you can spend it on the people who genuinely have pre-existing, and we have to define that and take care of them. We're not doing that. All they're doing is, oh, let's have more taxpayer money, add more to the already very expensive system, take care of the people who have pre-existing conditions. We have better solutions. And in fact, throwing money to solve a problem is not only with healthcare. It's everywhere in the government. Education system. Every single year there will be a ballot, more money for the schools. You know what? Somehow our education ranks 11th in the world, Shelley, although we spend more money on education than anybody else in the world. Money doesn't solve all the problems. In fact, it can be a problem. In education, in healthcare, everywhere else you want.
What about the healthcare dollars that we're spending on immigrants? Whether they're...
As a president wannabe?
Yeah.
That's a problem,
well,
too.
Well, you can't be, but...
Yeah, but it wannabe. That's a problem. It is contributing a lot. I mean, you look... It's really heartbreaking. You know, I have 3 siblings who live in California. One of them is a physician. My older sister. And when you look at the healthcare there, there is some access issues. Yet, the same state provide healthcare to people who jump the fence or the wall or walk through the desert as soon as they enter the land. Somehow California and Arizona feel they have the obligation to take care of those people. Currently, it's very hard to measure those numbers, but the estimate is about $83 billion a year.
Now, your sister, you know, she just recently retired. She was a OBGYN, right?
Right.
Did she ever see access issues with her patients? Like, she had to take care of, you know, patients that were undocumented, and did she ever run into that?
Well, what she did was many years ago, she's maverick.
Well, of course she is.
Yeah. She decided she will not take Medicare. She will not take Medicaid. She did take military because she adores military, as the whole family does. And she will take only select private insurance. That's it. she didn't want to deal with all that. So I don't think she had experience being exposed to the illegals. A lot of the care for the illegal immigrants, or most of it, is done by either the hospitals or people employed by the hospital and by Medicaid. Basically, the hospitals also, in return, they get funding for that from the state and from the federal government. Taxpayers are paying for that.
So we're paying it.
We're paying. In fact, the total cost, not to jump into the subject of immigration, the total annual cost for the illegal immigrants is about $800 billion. That takes into account all the drones you fly, all the border patrol, the health care. Many of them enter the country and go in Medicaid and food stamps. So it is very expensive. Just imagine if we have really law and order and only admit people the way I was admitted, wouldn't be better off, and all that money saved will be take care of our own people, the ones who have pre-existing. How fair is it that we have people pre-existing, they have difficulty getting care, supposedly, right?
Right.
And yet, we have every day 3,000 people cross the border. And guess what? They are dependent on the society. Isn't that discombobulated? So now you really convinced me that I should run for president, because I think I might be able to fix it. All I need to do is change my birthplace.
Well, I think that can be done.
Make it count in Ohio.
So as your HHS secretary, what I think I'm hearing you, Mr. President, that you're going to be auditing.
The president wannabe, yeah.
auditing the hospitals and the way that they function.
And physicians.
Auditing physicians, yes. Auditing pharmaceutical companies, but more on the specialty pharmacy.
Transparency there. Transparency. This idea of rebates is a good marketing tool. We don't like it. And also insurance companies. They need to be also watched for, you know, somebody might say, I thought you were anti-government, but the government has created this problem. We have to get involved to solve this problem. I think there has to be some watching. I mean, consumer protection is a good thing if we do it in a scientific, compassionate way.
Not just so consumer protection, but making sure that they're well educated with everything else, everything that could be happening to them.
Yes.
Massive consumer education.
That starts from grade school.
Right.
We need to work on that. Maybe someday we'll talk about education and how it's impacting us when we grow up.
Agree. Thank you.
Thank you.